Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon.
And we're right in the middle of the holiday season here.
We are.
Yes.
Just smack dab on the way to a new year.
Yes. And it just occurred to me, I'm curious, you know, what kind of activities everybody's up to during this time of year.
Yeah. Maybe they'll call and tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And how they're doing with awareness practice. What's going on as we wind down from one holiday and go into the next one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And if people want to call us today, you can reach us at 650-723-9010. So please feel free to pick up the phone and join us. We'd love to talk about whatever's on your mind, whatever's going on this holiday season. If you'd like to email us as well, you can reach us not on the air at openair@kzsu.org. Also, as many of you probably know, archives of all the shows are on Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Sherry, is there anything particular on your mind today about awareness practice that you'd like to share?
Well, I'm actually on retreat, as you know.
Yes.
So awareness practice is definitely in the front of my awareness.
Yes.
We're down in Carmel, which is one of our very favorite places to be on retreat, and have a retreat full of lovely folks who are, most of whom are doing working meditation right now or yoga or that sort of thing.
And
when we're on retreat like this, I do guidance all day, which means I sit either outside and look at the beautiful Pacific Ocean or sit inside a room if it's cold and rainy. And I have the wonderful privilege and opportunity of talking with people about their awareness practice all day long. So all of the things that we regularly look at are right there for me. You know, how difficult it is to stay present, how important it is to make a heroic effort to get to center, to get here in the present, and how conditioned we are to have voices carry us off into the past or into the future, how much of people's lives is revolves around trying to get information that they're okay, and how much information they get that they're not, and like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
All the stuff that I understand the holidays can really accentuate for people.
Yes.
You know, that whole deprivation, desire,
yes.
Dissatisfaction.
Yes.
It's just so much stuff. So that's one of the reasons that we do this retreat at the time of year that we do, because it starts just right after Christmas and goes over New Year's. So it kind of gives people an alternative to just being out in society, where so much of the conditioning is reinforced, at a really critical time. So the kind of the choice between being out there in the fray or going through part of the fray and then retreating and having a chance to look at all of this stuff when it's in kind of a heightened state.
Mm-hmm.
It's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine sometimes for me and for other people as well that perhaps life's ups and downs are sort of magnified.
Yes.
During this holiday period.
Yeah. Yeah, that relationships are often challenged and
mm-hmm.
tested. It's funny, this is one of the things that I would love for people to talk about if they were interested, but so it seems to me, and I confess, I stay pretty much out of the fray. I don't participate in any way. I don't give presents, so I don't shop, and I don't listen to music, so I don't, you know, as somebody observed, unless I'm on hold on the telephone, I tend not to hear any of that. So, you know, I mean, I'm out driving around, and I see lights and that sort of thing, but pretty much it doesn't have an impact on my life. But I hear from a lot of people, and this was certainly my experience for many years, there's this idea that the holidays are going to be the way society presents them. So if you watch television, you get the pictures of, you know, the people coming home for the holidays, and there's mom and dad at the door greeting them, and everybody comes in, and it's just fun and happy and joyful. And then for a lot of people, the reality is nothing like that. And how difficult it is to make peace with that in general, or on a, you know, a year-to-year, holiday-to-holiday, moment-to-moment basis, coming to terms with the parts of us, often very young parts of us, who long for that that magic that maybe we had as children, maybe we didn't, but everybody knows we should have. And then comparing that image and that longing with what is currently, and as I say, making peace with the disparity, perhaps, between those two things.
Yes.
Seems like there's a lot of suffering in that.
Yes.
In fact, I was in Murphy's right before I came down here, and it was the night before Christmas, and I happened to be in my office working, and one of the local merchants came by and was talking to me about what it's like to be in the store Christmas Eve, and people are coming in just hysterical, desperate to find presents and the right presents, and all of the pressure, and they're running out of time, and they've got to get to the grocery store, and or they've got to get in the car, and they've got to travel, or they've got to, you know, this sort of thing. And,
Wow.
It's an interesting time.
Yes. A lot of pressure, it sounds like, that we put on ourselves.
Did you experience some of that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And I know for me growing up, a lot of pressure around giving gifts and the expectations around that. And I've struggled with that a lot. Seems like for several years I didn't give gifts much at all.
Uh-huh.
And sort of getting back into that.
Often not well received.
No.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But all that, you know, all that stuff's going on inside. What am I supposed to do? This doesn't feel right. The other alternative doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And coming to peace with that.
Yeah. Finding, it seems like for a lot of folks, trying to find what is their celebration.
Yes.
What is kind of their own expression of what the holidays are meant to represent, to bring to us, to as a way of being with one another and in life, and whether it's a religious holiday or a less religious holiday, you know, if it's just a time to get together, be with loved ones, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yes, yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. And Sherry, people have been emailing us over the past week.
Good.
I have an email here from a listener in Philadelphia. Dear Sherry, I am currently dealing with a psychological condition called dissociative identity disorder. Basically, my brain split off a part of my personality at a very young age in response to emotional trauma, and I now have a split personality that sometimes takes over my consciousness. This other personality knows nothing about Zen or awareness or presence or acceptance or anything that the self I would otherwise identify with does. It knows nothing about love and trust and a whole number of things. All it knows, and all I know when it takes control of my body, is shame, guilt, fear, mistrust, etc. The things one would associate with a victim of trauma. Do you have any insight on how Zen and awareness can help facilitate an integration of these split personalities, or ways I can sort of knock myself over the head with reality when I am lost in that dissociated world? As it is now, I just kind of writhe around in hell until something comes along and wakes me up. Thank you. Your show is very helpful, and I'm very glad that you do it.
Well, it's that's an interesting one. I hope that what I say will not be interpreted as dismissing or minimizing someone's life experience. And I will tell you that I am here with 25 people, all of whom are experiencing the same thing. At least that's how they present it.
Yes.
In fact, I was talking with one of the monks right before I came in here, and we were talking about practice and how it works, and what we agreed it with about is that everything works when it works. You know, when I can remember to come back to center, when I can remember to breathe,
yes.
when I can remember to be conscious, when I can and sometimes that doesn't work. So I was talking with another retreatant earlier in the afternoon who said, the difficulty for me is I'll know I'm identified and I can't get disidentified.
Uh-huh.
So I know I'm stuck in this story about how this person done me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I know it,
mm-hmm.
but I can't get out of the story.
Uh-huh.
So there are levels and layers of being identified with some reality, and sometimes it's just a matter of, whoa, I am in this victim reality. I'm identified with the part of me who suffered tremendous trauma in childhood,
mm-hmm.
and just that awareness is enough to pop a person out of that identification and back here into right here present time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, as with the other one, I know it. I know I am. So, you know, maybe I get really upset with my parent or my child or my partner, and I know that it's just me being upset,
mm-hmm.
but I can't get off it. I can't, you know, I could use all of the lingo to
yes.
say, you know, I'm really stuck in this aspect of the personality
yes.
and I'm identified with, but it doesn't do me any good because I am.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's, to me, that's the human condition. What we're trying to do is wake up out of the survival systems, the survival reality that we've put in place to live through the trauma of childhood so that we can be conscious, be present, be here in what I talk about as conscious, compassionate awareness,
mm-hmm.
and from that place allow all of these traumatized, unconscious, conditioned, suffering aspects of ourselves to come in and find acceptance.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that's helpful to the writer. I hope the writer's listening. I do not find labels helpful.
Yes.
Labels kind of alarm me. I work with a lot of people who are driven in their lives by anxiety. I work with a lot of people who are who have become depressed as a response to overwhelming anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my experience that labeling a person from an experience is in any way helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to, I don't know if this is a silly comparison, but it changed my life when this happened. My little dog developed arthritis in
mm-hmm.
her right front foot, an ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the doctor, well, what do we do? Because I'm a Westerner. You know, my assumption is, well, put her on a medication. Because
mm-hmm.
that, you know, then it won't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, we don't medicate animals for things like that. Because sometimes it hurts her, and sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
When it hurts her, she won't use it. When it doesn't hurt her, she will.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what a difference. Because what we do is develop a condition, we label it, and then we live with it for the rest of our lives,
mm-hmm.
failing to notice that sometimes I'm having this experience, sometimes I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that that's not a popular perspective from the point of view of Western medicine, but I think from the point of view of Eastern philosophy and awakening and ending suffering, it's a tremendously helpful perspective.
Yes.
Because that, you know, we get a label like that, and it's like, oh my God, you know, I must be the only one in the world, or I'm one of a handful of people. But I have never encountered a psychological and emotional and mental condition that we all don't share.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that we're doing is, if it's a continuum, we're at different places on the continuum with everything in the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, for what it's worth, that's my take.
Yes, that's quite amazing to me, that perspective, that we're all experiencing everything.
Yes, and as we are more accepting of that, you know, acceptance is the fast track to center.
Uh-huh.
The reason that we are caught in these identities and unable to get out of them, in large part, is because they are unacceptable.
Uh-huh.
Now, the interesting thing is that they are unacceptable to the parts that are unacceptable.
Uh-huh.
So
yes.
If I have, you know, I grow up in a family and I'm an angry child, and then I get information that that's not okay. If
mm-hmm.
I'm really angry, you know, I'm fond of pointing out that I'm old enough that all these things happened to me before there were labels and medications.
Uh-huh.
So I was a really violent, angry child, but there wasn't, you know, that I didn't get labeled ADD or I didn't get labeled with blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And then put on some medication. So, you know, I basically was left just having to come to terms with it,
mm-hmm.
for which I am deeply, deeply grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But I get a lot of information that it's not okay to be that way. There's something wrong with me for having this kind of uncontrollable, strong emotion
mm-hmm.
and acting out in this way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we look at what's going on with us, and we see, oh well, you know, I have a really strong reaction here, but not much there. I don't have anything going about that I can tell. But boy, I get upset over this. You know, if we realize that our reactions to ourselves have been conditioned by people who reacted to us that
mm-hmm.
way,
mm-hmm.
then we can begin to get a sense that, like for me, it wasn't the anger that was a problem. It was the judgment that was received and internalized.
Uh-huh.
It's that I hated myself for being angry. So then there's no way to deal with the anger, because the anger is shameful and says something about who I am as a person, and I just have to try to get away from that and hide that and pretend it's not going on and be, you know, all of these coping mechanisms that we have. But if it's just simply a matter of, I have an incredible amount of energy that has a habit of coming out in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right. Well, good. Having an incredible amount of energy, well, that's not such a bad thing.
Yes.
But, well, how do I want to use it in a way that takes care of me and is kind and not harmful to everyone and everything around me? Well,
yes.
I'm an intelligent person. I can figure that out.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so when we take those labels off, when we can get past the judgment, when it becomes a matter of, this is what's going on, and it's my job, as a person who does awareness practice, as a person who is ending suffering, it's my job to find acceptance for all of these things and help them return to their authentic nature. So what got labeled insane rage was actually nothing more than a whole lot of energy at one time.
Yes.
Okay, that's what it authentically is.
Yes.
It's a whole lot of energy. So that's our job, to help these things that are trapped and stuck and in suffering return to their authentic nature and and find peace.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010. And in fact, Sherry, the phone is ringing here. I'd like to welcome Claire from Palo Alto. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'd like to continue this discussion that we're having about awareness practice and being at center and being off-center or in a conditioned place. Because it seems to me that sometimes I can have what seems on the surface to be the same experience, but it's different depending on where I'm located. For instance, I have a part of my personality that's sometimes I can be very playful and exuberant. And sometimes that can come from a centered place and it feels good and expansive. And other times it can come from a place that doesn't feel like it's a center. It feels like there's an agenda behind it.
Yeah.
Like I have to be this way in order to be loved and accepted.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
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 So, in fact, probably most of our personality would fall into that system, right? So, you might have a part of you who is genuinely open-hearted and loving, and then you could appear to be open-hearted and loving with an agenda.
Right.
So that's really kind of job one for us with awareness practice, isn't it?
It's to see where I'm located and what's underneath
yes.
my experience.
Yeah, so from a Buddhist way of talking about it, is this leading away from suffering or toward suffering?
Mm.
And the thing about it is, you know, we in our practice, we say a lot, it's not what, it's how. And that's a perfect, what you're saying is a perfect example. The same behavior from one place leads away from suffering.
Right.
And from another place leads towards suffering. The what, the content of it, is the same. But the process, the how of it, makes it completely different.
Right. Can I say a little bit more?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having an experience in a moment where I'm experiencing things happening in my life that I've wanted to happen for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm noticing that I'm saying things like, wow, you know, I can't believe this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I say that, it's like there's a hook in there. It's like I go off center and there's a part of me that, like, doesn't believe it or doesn't want to believe it. And
yes. And isn't that a helpful thing to notice?
Yeah.
Because... So there's something that I want, and I want it. And there's just no question that I want it.
Mm-hmm.
I want it. You know, if I have this, then I'll be happy. That's really all I want.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get it.
Yes.
And suddenly I find out that there are a lot of other folks inside who don't want it,
yeah.
who are invested in not having it, who were invested in... Someday out in the future, maybe I'll have it.
Yeah.
But not now.
Yeah.
Because when I get what I want, I'm a different person. So in order to accept something in our life, even something that we would consider positive that we really want, we have to be willing to lose our identity.
Wow. Yes.
And yeah. we don't think about that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like in this time I have to be willing to lose the part of my identity that says I don't deserve this, that I'm not worthy of this.
Yes. And that had a whole, you know, a whole lifetime survival strategy built around not having this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I have this whole orientation to life as a person who doesn't have this.
Yeah.
Now suddenly I have it. Well, I'm a completely different person. All my relationships are different. You know, what I do, how I see things. It's all different.
Yeah.
There are parts of us who get threatened with that kind of change. So we really do have to be willing to be a different person. And it's shocking to realize that there are parts of us who would rather be without what we want than to change. Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, in my world, this is where we draw a larger circle of acceptance. Instead of, good grief, what is the matter with me? This is unhealthy. It's just, wow. Well, you know, that kind of makes sense.
Isn't that interesting?
So I drive the old car, and I know that if I had a new car, I would be happy. And then I get the new car, and I find that I miss the old one.
Yeah. Oh, for me, I don't allow myself to really enjoy the new car. It's like there are parts of me that are saying, no, the new car's going to break down, or the new car's something going to go wrong.
That's right. It costs too much.
Yeah.
What will people think? Yeah. So these folks are always jumping up and giving their opinion, but especially when there's something big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get something that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to have an opinion.
Uh-huh.
And it breaks down often pretty evenly between the yes folks and the no folks. You know, and that's a surprise. Because I think all of me wants that new job. No, in fact, there are probably as many parts of me who don't as who do.
Yeah. I really appreciate what you said about me looking to be a completely different person.
Uh-huh.
I'm being willing to, like, redefine myself now that things are changing in my world.
That's right, yeah. So now I'm a person who has this thing I want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can still, you know, I still have my sense of humor, and I'm still interested in this, and I still like to read that, and I'm different.
Yeah.
Very fun.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. You're very welcome.
Yeah, and thank you. I feel very blessed to have an awareness practice in my life. So.
Oh, me too.
Your appreciation, and to wish you a happy new year.
And a happy new year to you. Thank you very much.
Bye, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Claire. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Stay tuned to KZSU as we finish up the year here. DJ Decca will be coming on tonight with her trademark world music from 6 to 8 p.m. Then Gabe from 8 to 10 p.m. and the Bot of Euphony from 10 p.m. to midnight. We'll be right back in just a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010, and you can be one of the last callers of 2003. Sherry, I was listening to the previous caller, and I was thinking about, you know, what is my motivation for whatever I'm doing? What is my agenda?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's been really powerful when I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Which takes us back to the email, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm aware of it.
Yes. Little caveat there.
Yeah. I'm really. It's really helpful when I can remember to be aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, how do we get to that place of being more aware?
Well, you know, there are a ton of tricks, and still, what it comes down to, I suspect, is patience and perseverance.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's the going along, you know, the old going along and stepping in a hole.
Yes.
And, you know, you're walking down the sidewalk and you fall into the hole, and that process of seeing it, remembering, waking up, seeing it, going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Suffer, wake up. Ah, there I am. Okay, I'm awake. All right, I'm here. I'm going to stay awake. And then we make the big plans for, and then at some point down the road we wake up again.
Yes.
Realizing that we've gone off. You know, did you hear the public service announcement? Were you listening to it during the break?
Yes, the second one?
that is a sobering little message about television.
Yes.
And so, of course, I think one of the ways that we can support ourselves in being more present is not indulging in those kinds of addictions, doing the things that cause us to remember, not cause us to go to sleep.
Yes.
So being around people who are attempting to wake up, meditation, workshops,
yes.
going on retreat,
yes.
Reading things that inspire us rather than take us into fantasy and illusion, just focusing our lives, making sure that we have time for silence and solitude every day, and increasingly supporting ourselves in being present. And then we still fall asleep. So then while we're doing all of these things to be more present, we're also becoming more accepting and patient and kind toward ourselves for the times that we're asleep. And as we do that, it's amazing. When we are cruel to ourselves, the desire to escape is huge.
Yes.
But when we are kind to ourselves, we actually want to be more present because the kindness is really attractive.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Those are all good things that we can do.
Yes. And the thing that occurred to me as you were talking is, for me, this sense of commitment. This is what I'm doing.
Yes.
It doesn't care if I don't want to do it today.
That's right.
This is what I'm doing.
That's right. It goes back to my brushing the teeth.
Yes.
Approach to awareness.
Yes.
You know, if I have to decide three times a day, or when I wake up in the morning, now will I brush my teeth today or not? You know, at a certain point, and it's not the process that we go through to make that decision is not like the process that unlike the process that we go through to decide to wake up.
Yes.
You know, we're tired of suffering. We're tired of the pain. We're tired of paying the price. It's just not worth it.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to go to the dentist. I don't want to pay those bills. I don't want my teeth to fall out.
Yes.
I don't want to do that. It's just easier to brush my teeth. And practicing awareness is the same way. For a while, we argue about it. And then we realize, no, I don't want to pay that price any longer. I'm just going to wake up. That's what
yes.
I'm going to do.
Yes.
And then it happens very quickly, really.
Yes, yes. Words that came to mind for me is that sort of the drama loses its novelty over time.
Yes. Yeah, it becomes boring.
Yes.
Listening to the same old story, feeling the same old feelings. When we get, after we've paid attention to that for a while, we get to the point where we really are ready for something new.
Yes.
And the only thing that's new is the present.
Yes. In every moment.
The present, we're in the same old, same old. And when we start boring ourselves with what for ego is endlessly compelling, you know, how this happened to me, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and how is it going to work, and I don't know how I'm going to,
I.
And when we get tired of that same old soap opera with that same old tired lead character,
yes.
we decide that we want something new, and then being here in the present is where new is.
Yes. And what's new here at KZSU is the phone is ringing. I'd like to welcome Xian Ma from San Mateo. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Good evening.
I actually just called in because I could really relate to what you've been talking about and what Claire mentioning. You know, on Christmas Eve, I was offered this incredible, incredible opportunity, and I watched this part of me whom I was identified with say, oh, but, you know, I have this part, potential job, and maybe not till, you know, mid-April or something. And I hung up afterwards and went, who was that? You know, it's kind of like this is the thing it's so just incredible, and yet what I've been watching since then are all these parts kind of, there's the yes parts, what you were talking about, and the no parts. About, well, what about this? It's mostly especially ones that are scared.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Because even an incredible opportunity quickly translates into you're going to need to be different.
Yeah.
And then what does that mean? What does that mean for who you are and what you do and how you relate to other people and how your life works? And so folks inside get nervous and anxious. And they're scared.
And how are all the details going to work out?
Yes. Yeah. So there's the unknown. There's realizing if I step outside my conditioned patterns of behavior, I really don't know what's going to happen.
Sherry, can I interrupt just
sure.
a moment here? There's a little bit of feedback on the line, and I'm wondering if she and Ma has her radio on in the background. Maybe
oh,
she
okay.
could turn that down.
Yeah, we just turned it on.
Great, thank you.
Is that better?
Yes.
We're driving across the Sandwich Dale Bridge.
Uh-huh.
So it is working with those parts, and yet knowing in my heart that this is something, you know, that I want to do and sooner, and the job really doesn't matter. So it's the like the part that was saying, oh, well, maybe the job is the part that has been off and on for periods now since I got laid off about financial insecurity and whatever.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't make any, you know, it's so, there's always reasons that...
Yeah, well, and you know, with this, these aspects of the personality and how they work as a survival system, we go along and it's the need that is greatest comes up to the surface, and that becomes the focus. So I need X, you know, I really need this thing that God identified as the most important thing, and then that need is met. So in this case, this incredible opportunity is presented to you. Then, one, as soon as that need is met, the next need underneath that one pops up to the top. And very often, the one that's right under that primary need is in opposition to the one that just got met. So, for instance, I'm going along, we're back to that, you know, I want a relationship. I don't have a relationship. I've been alone for years and years and years. I really want a relationship. Oh, if I could just meet the right person, if I could just have somebody special in my life, then I would be happy. Okay? So, here comes the perfect person. Now I have somebody special in my life. And guess what the need is under that? Well, but, you know, I used to have so much time for myself. I could really do what I want. I have all these friends. You know, my life really worked before. Now I've got this person in my life, and I've had to give up this perfectly wonderful life that now, I would say, I loved. Can you picture it?
Yeah, which is the same process as what I was just, it's a different context.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So then, if we stay with this one, so then the perfect person decides I'm not the perfect person, and they leave. Suddenly, the life that was so wonderful that I had lost in order to have this relationship is empty. And all I want is that person back again in my life. Because what I've realized now is my previous life was unfulfilling. And that being in this relationship, all designed to maintain suffering.
Well, it's what you're talking about in terms of the like, dislike, want, don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What you talked about in the past, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're on the San Mateo Bridge, so it's like the planes lined up coming into the airport in San Francisco. There's a certain place you can be, and you can just see them stacked up out there. It looks like into infinity, waiting for their time on the runway, and that's what these needs are, these personalities. These survival systems, they're just lined up, waiting for their chance to shine.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's good to see them, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been interesting watching. I mean, after I caught on to the first, you know, got unidentified with the first voice, and I'm like, whoa, so mostly it's been a matter of just watching and
yes.
hearing the different voices coming up.
Yes. Not needing to believe it.
No.
We can just We can just stay there and just watch them all come in. So if I thought one of those planes was going to make the difference in my life, then I would be watching each one land in a state of anxiety or agitation, right? But if I know those are just planes coming in to land, it can be interesting for as long as I want to watch, and when I don't want to watch any longer, I can go on with my life. I don't have to believe anything about this.
Right. I can live my life without looking up the sky watching.
That's right, and trying to figure out, what does this mean, and what about that, and maybe I should this, and maybe I don't need to get caught up in this passing show. It's just going on, and I'm just watching it. And at some point, something will happen.
Something will happen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something will happen. I'll get hungry and decide it's time to eat, or I'll get tired and need to go to sleep, or it's time to go to work, so I have to take a shower and put on my clothes, or whatever.
But it's not being driven by one of those planes.
Precisely. And I'm not missing it, because I am so caught up in, well, what about this, and what about that, and what does it mean, and what should I do, and how should I be, and what if it doesn't work? You know?
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, and is it dinner time? Well, then I need to eat. And life simply unfolds for us in that way. And I can hear the people out there going, well, yeah, but what if there's a decision that needs to be made? And it's exactly the same process. At some point, a decision will be made. In the same way, at some point, I'll get hungry and need to eat my dinner.
Mm-hmm. And it's just what's there.
Just what's there. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it appears without any agonizing at all. It's a good deal. It's very relaxing.
It's a good deal.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Shin Ma. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010. Sherry, I love that analogy of the planes coming in for a landing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all just kind of, all those needs just sort of waiting there patiently or impatiently
mm-hmm.
to get their chance
yeah.
in the spotlight.
Yeah. Just lined up waiting for their moment in the spotlight.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. And if we take it on, if we feel like there's something we need to do, then we're just pulled in every direction. But if it's as simple as accepting whatever is there, then that's just there. So somebody comes up and says, I'm really afraid. Well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really excited. Oh, well, that's okay too. Well, I don't want to do any of it. That's okay too.
Mm-hmm.
It's all okay.
Yes.
Then what do I do? Well, whatever there is to do. And life takes care of that. It's really quite amazing. Life comes in much the same way as those airplanes. So the phone rings and you pick it up and you answer it. You know, you have an appointment at 9 o'clock and you go to it. Somebody calls and cancels the appointment. You do whatever is the next thing to do that wasn't on the schedule because you thought at 9 o'clock you were going to be in the appointment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Quite amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's quite amazing. Life is incredibly well organized. And I don't know if it has any kind of, you know, Palm Pilot or daytimer system or whatever, but whatever that system is, we could all benefit from tuning into it.
Tuning into the appropriate frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me also as you were talking that there's no need to really idealize meeting all these needs or hoping that they go away or
no.
worrying how many more are going to show up.
No. If we're not taking them personally, if our only job is to accept, that's not difficult. So it's like, you know, I need to accept that you're here. Well, there's not a lot to do about that because you are here.
Mm-hmm.
So the doing about it that I would get caught up in and that would cause the suffering is resisting you being here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I wasn't ready for him to be here. I thought he was going to come tomorrow. Well, now what do I do? And there's nothing in the refrigerator. But accepting that you're here, that's really easy. You
mm-hmm.
are here.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, whatever's to be done will be done.
Exactly.
Yes.
It all unfolds. Well, you know, I'm feeling really pressured. Well, that's okay. Well, I don't know what to do. Well, that's okay. Well, this is all very confusing. Well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does any of that require anything? No. And with acceptance, it's neutral. It's painless. It's just, it's okay to be confused.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not okay to be confused, now we have a problem. But if it's okay to be confused, well, that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't know what to do. Well, that's okay.
Yes. I'm picturing a huge circle of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's going on is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very peaceful.
Yes, and you know, it's one of those, if you've ever tried to have an argument with somebody who just says, well, that's okay, you realize very quickly, number one, it's really one-sided.
Yes.
Okay? Because I'm going to argue with you, and you just keep saying, well, that's okay.
Yes.
Now, what I then very quickly get into is being upset with you because you're saying that it's okay. And
yes.
Then you say, that's okay. And I either have to, you know, start pounding on you or give it up.
Yes.
Yeah, and if I start pounding on you and you say, that's okay, you know, after a while it's like, oh, no, I can't do this anymore.
Yes.
Which is great.
That's
what we're going for.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. This is our last show of the year. Coming up near the end of the hour here.
Isn't that something? That this is the end of 2003?
Yes.
Can you remember back to 2000?
That's a long time ago.
At this time in 2000, remember the whole world was supposed to come to an end?
Yes.
All the computers were going to crash and your toaster wouldn't make toast. And
I was worried. I was appropriately worried by the media.
Yeah, and you had to buy a bunch of water because the water is computerized and we weren't going to have any water. And then, I don't know if you stayed up to see the New Year end, but when we're on retreat, we meditate into the New Year. And
yes.
It's like, well, nothing happened.
Yeah.
What a very big letdown. I mean,
the moon didn't fall from the sky.
Yeah, surely something should have malfunctioned with all that media hype. And nothing. Nothing. We just went right on, and then it was 2000.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of fun. I think we can learn something from that.
Little message there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, is it that Mark Twain's deal? Most of the things that I worried about never happened? Something, he had some clever way of expressing that, and there it is. We spend a lifetime worrying about things.
Yes.
They don't happen.
Yes.
And most of us fail to realize that they didn't happen. We just go right on worrying as if we're accomplishing something.
Yes.
So, you know, we can make the 2004 the year of no worry.
Year of no worry. Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
Yeah, the year of acceptance.
The year of acceptance.
Yeah. It beats the year of the pig or rooster or something like that.
Yeah. And people could call in next week and tell us about how they've started the year of no worry.
Yes. Yeah, or if they got anxious about the mere thought
of not worrying.
Yeah.
Yes. Sherry, I was flipping through a magazine recently and I came across an interesting story I'd like to share.
Mm-hmm.
There's a former professional basketball player. His name is Kevin Johnson. He was an all-star point guard with the Phoenix Suns and retired in the year 2000, and he's from Sacramento. And he went to Sacramento High School, and in the intervening years, it struggled a lot. Low test scores, a lot of student apathy, campus has been deteriorating. And he's come back to Sacramento, and he's put a lot of time and energy and money into getting the school up and going again. It's a charter school now that's run by his nonprofit organization, and he's raised more than $7 million in the past couple of years.
Wow.
Exciting.
It is exciting. That doesn't kind of make you want to go to that school?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's gotten Bill Gates excited, too. Donated some money towards the sprucing up the 10-acre campus there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And what a marvelous opportunity to make a difference in so many lives.
Yes.
And the thing that fascinates me about that is, I watch my response to that, to that story, and I'm excited.
Yes.
You know, I do. I want to go to that school. I want to participate in that. I want to be a part of that.
Yes.
And it's great. It's a yes kind of approach to life, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because what he could have done is say, what is the matter with you people? Why have you let this school? You know, you need to, you governor, you mayor, you parents, you somebody, you need to do something about this. But instead, I mean, does he have kids who go there?
Not that I know of.
Just that he graduated from there.
He graduated from there?
Yeah.
Wanted to see it come back.
Yeah. It meant something to him.
Yes.
And so he wanted to give to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And through that desire and through that effort, he inspires others, and the world is a happier place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something we could take on in 2004.
Yes,
yeah,
making the world a happier place.
Yeah, whatever it is. Somebody was telling me today, one person was telling me about starting to create in her backyard an urban habitat for wildlife.
Mm.
I don't know if you've followed that.
No.
But, instead of, you know, we've cut down everything and put in lawns, and then we put all this poison on the lawns so
yes.
that nothing can live on it, so that
yes.
we have a nice green lawn. And
yes.
so taking all of that out and taking the poisons out and putting the plants back in that the birds and the animals like and need, because
mm-hmm.
you know, there, I guess there's just a huge problem with birds not being able to complete their migration because they don't have their stops along the way to rest and eat, and that. So that's what she's going to do, and then see if other people in her neighborhood and in her city are interested in doing that. Somebody else was talking about becoming a part of the Habitat for Humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
participating in that way. You know, there are just so many little and huge things that we can do to make the world a happier place, make it more the place that we want to live in.
Yes, yes.
And it's fun.
Yes.
That's the biggest part. What's this fellow's name, Kevin?
Kevin Johnson.
Kevin. You know, Kevin is having more fun than just about
yes.
anybody.
Yes.
That's the whole point. You know, it's not, oh, God, I have to go out and do
change
good work.
Change the world.
Change the world. Make a difference.
Yes.
I project he hops out of bed in the morning,
yes.
and he cannot wait to get out there and make this happen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, you're building a house for somebody. Building a home for somebody who's never had a home.
Mm-hmm.
Now that will hop you out of bed in the morning
mm-hmm.
to get out there and participate in
mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the patience and perseverance you were talking about earlier. Because somebody was asking him the key to his success as a player, and he said, hard work.
Mm.
And from the article, I get a sense of a lot of passion, a lot of drive, not going to take no for an answer.
So yes. he's a basketball player, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
you know, just hours. I mean, basketball courts. Now, if you and I had to run up and down them for an hour or so, we'd think, you know, this is a marathon. But they're really very small.
Yes.
And So this fellow has spent years of his life,
yes,
in this little confined area with this little ball, you
yes
know, passing it and dribbling it and doing free throws. Probably, you know, he's done 10 million free throws.
Yes.
And how do you do that?
Yes.
You know, how do you, it doesn't matter, I don't feel like it, I just want to sleep in, I don't want to pray, I'm mm-hmm tired of basketball, you know, and you just draw deeper and
yes
and keep showing up and learn not to listen to the voices and stay inspired by what you're doing and the difference that you're making, and then, you know, just take that into this next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a lot of work to transform a run-down, beat-up high school?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've been practicing in that way, you know, hard work is not a problem. That,
yes,
that doesn't stop you. Having to do something
yes
over and over, that doesn't stop you.
Yes.
The fact that it's not going to happen tomorrow, that doesn't stop you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It's very exciting. Life
yes
is good.
Life is good.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great way to end our last show in 2003.
Absolutely. With a reminder to ourselves and each other that life is good.
Life is
and
good.
And we don't want to miss it.
We don't want to miss it.
It's going to be over really soon.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to just participate as wholeheartedly as we can in every single moment we've got.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Okay.
I'd like to thank everyone who's been a part of our show today. Lori and Jay. All of our callers and listeners today, both locally and online.
Big thank yous and big Happy New Year's.
Big thank yous and big Happy New Year's. And if you want to email us during this year or next year, you can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. And if you didn't catch all of today's show, you can go back and listen to it on the archive at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. I'll talk to you next week, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good night.
Bye-bye.